Question. Do you think Jesus is coming back soon? We know that's what he says in Revelation chapter 22 and verse 20. He said, "Behold, I am coming soon." He said it 2,000 years ago. So soon to us is perhaps not the same as soon to God. But the fact is, he told us to always be ready for soon, whenever that might be. Another question. How do you make preparations for the thief in the night? 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verse 2 and 3, Paul tells the church in Thessalonica that his coming is going to be like a thief in the night. You're not going to know when it's coming. Back then, there was not some sort of ADT house warning system or whatever the other ones are that notify the police when there's been some breach in the security of the house. They didn't have those things. And even today, those things can be foiled. You know, professional thieves know exactly where to go to turn those kinds of things off or to avoid them in some way. Third question. Do you get tired of watching for the adversary? 1 Peter chapter 5. Peter tells us to be alert always. Here's what he says. Be sober-minded. Be watchful. Your adversary, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion, seeking someone to devour. Not about you, but if I had to walk out of the house every single day, worried about a wild animal perhaps crouching in the bushes for me, I'd be a little nervous about going out of the house too often. Or at least not going out with high-powered rifle, you know, maybe even some handheld pistol or something. It's being watchful all the time can wear you out. And yet that's what we're told. We're told we have to be ready at any time. Jesus demands vigilance from his followers. Let's take a look at Luke chapter 12 and take a look at what he says there. Actually, there's two passages, Luke 12 and Luke 21. In both passages, he tells us, be watchful. Says it in a different context, says something slightly different in both places, but something relevant to us nonetheless. In Luke chapter 12, verses 35 and following, the first thing he says is, stay dressed. Keep your lamps burning. Be like men watching for the master to return. Stay dressed. You know, when most of us get home, one of the first things we want to do is kind of get into more comfortable clothing. And yet we're told here, and of course it's a metaphor. It's not saying don't ever take off your good clothes and put on something relaxing. But spiritually, stay dressed. Always be in the mode of thinking that, you know, you need to kind of have the right appropriate apparel on because you're ready when things are supposed to happen in a certain way. He tells them basically, keep your lamps burning. How about keeping the lights on? You know, we've just been through a period of a storm in which a lot of us didn't even have lights at all. And maybe that sort of brings to mind at least the whole issue of what it takes to keep the lights on. How much effort it takes sometimes when the lights go out. Well, he's saying simply here, be ready enough so that you're dressed, you have the lights on, and the boss may come at any time. That's basically what he says, is be like men waiting for their master to return. It's like the servants in the house, okay? Stay dressed, keep the lights on, be ready for the boss to come in the door. Now, Jesus says in verse 40, you know, the Son of Man is going to come when you don't expect him. And all the predictions we might try to make about when Christ is going to come back, we really don't know. You know, he's going to come when we don't expect him. Maybe he's going to come when we have stopped being watchful. I really can't tell you that. But that sort of enforces the whole idea why we're supposed to be watchful all the time. And then he tells the story in verses 41 and following about the good servant and the bad servant. You know, about the good servant who's always taking care of the other servants and the bad servant who kind of gets caught just sort of doing things. He gets tired. And, you know, he wants to just loaf a little bit and just sort of gives in to some other temptations. It's interesting because what's prompted this discussion is Peter's question. Are you telling this for us or is this for everybody? You know, and I think by implication, Jesus is saying, even though he doesn't outright say it, you know, you all need to take a listen to this. This is for everyone. Be ready, because Jesus is going to come when you don't expect him. Over in Luke 21, he returns to this same idea of watchfulness. Now here in chapter 21, he's about ready himself to die. And he's talking, you know, he's in Jerusalem by this time. And, you know, his life is very short now. And he knows that it's coming. But in chapter 21, verses 34 and following, he comes back to this issue of being watchful and staying awake. So I'm going to assume at least one thing is important here. He really means this, and this is a very important issue. If he's going to hit on it twice, and probably more, his disciples, as we've already read from 1 Peter, they're going to talk about it as well, to be alert. But he says it a little bit differently here, and he says, watch yourselves. And so I kind of wonder if he doesn't mean here, take a look at your own impulses. Think about yourselves and look at the things he says to be careful of. Don't get weighed down with dissipation and drunkenness. Okay? But he also says about being concerned about the cares of life. And I've always found that to be a rather interesting phrase. I think there are two ways we can demonstrate too much cares for life. One of them is the cares that make us comfortable. You know, all the things that we like to do and enjoy doing can perhaps be a major distraction for us like anything else. You know, and I'm not saying some of those things are wrong. You know, watching a little TV once in a while, you know, playing games, you know, and enjoying some of the things of life that God himself has given us. And yet those things can kind of be a trap in some ways because we can get so focused on them that we forget to be watchful. The other side of this are the anxieties of life. Those are the kind of cares I think maybe we often think about. You know, we don't have enough money. You know, what's going to happen to us and such. Somebody's sick in the family. You know, these cares can be things that create a burden for us. And it's normal for those things to happen. But Jesus says, just be careful. Don't let those things be so distracting that you're not watchful anymore. And again, he tells us here, verse 34, the day will come suddenly, and it will come upon all. And so Jesus says, basically, be alert to all dangers and temptations. Now, I think there's a number of ways that we face temptation today. A number of things, maybe not specific things, but categories, perhaps, that cause us to be tempted. Number one is giving in to momentary pleasures. You know, in Hebrews chapter 11, verses 24 and 25, Jesus tells us, we are told by the Hebrew writer about Moses and about Moses' thinking. Now, we kind of laugh in some ways because we know Moses, when he was called by God, didn't want to go. And he made some excuses, he made quite a few excuses about not wanting to go. But the writer here gives him some credit. And he says, by faith, Moses, when he was grown up, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to be mistreated with the people of God than to enjoy the fleeting pleasures of sin. Isn't that an interesting insight? Moses was raised in a privileged environment. Sometimes we forget that because by the time God called him, he'd been living out in the desert for 40 years. But he was raised in a privileged environment. And he could have used that privilege to gain all kinds of more privileges for himself. Monetary privileges. Pleasurable privileges in any way, shape, or form that this major power in the world at the time could have given him. And yet he doesn't do that. He avoids these fleeting pleasures of sin. And when you begin to give in to those kinds of things, a lot of unspiritual people will praise you for it. But not God. Remember Moses, who wouldn't give in to the momentary pleasures of sin. The second kind of temptation that we might face is just going along with the crowd. In Matthew 7 and verse 13, Jesus tells a story, or not really a story, but he gives us an image about the narrow gate versus the wide gate. And if you remember, in the narrow gate, very few people enter the narrow gate. How many people enter the wide gate? Most people seem to be entering the wide gate. So just from the standpoint of fewer people, most people, should we be following the crowd? Probably not. Following the crowd is going to take you into a way that seems easier. It's certainly very tempting to follow the crowd. But more often than not, the crowd is probably going to be wrong. They're probably going to be on that road to destruction. A third thing that I think sometimes happens to us is that we allow critics, mockers, and blasphemers to intimidate us into silence and inactivity. We need to not be afraid. We need to not be intimidated by allowing that to happen. We believe and know that we follow the truth. That's not arrogance on our part. It certainly isn't because we believe we're any smarter than anybody else. We just happen to believe that Jesus really meant what he said. We happen to believe the disciples' testimony that when they said, "This Jesus we know was crucified and came back 3 days later, and now he offers forgiveness of sins." We just simply believe that. And we believe there's some reasons why that's legitimate to believe. But we're not smarter than anybody else. We know we're sinners like everybody else. That's why we're here. That's why we do what we do, because we know that we need what we have here. But we will not allow people to silence us. We will not allow that message not to be heard. And that's, as Christians, we have to do that. Now, I have an interesting insight. At least I think it's interesting. We've talked on Wednesday nights about Psalm 73. And I think there's a real interesting sort of internal struggle that the psalmist is having that might tell us something about what also can cause us to stop being watchful. And I'd like you to turn to Psalm 73 for just a moment or two. Psalm 73 is, one of my teachers many, many years ago said he thought Psalm 73 was probably one of the most underrated psalms. And I think Psalm 73 is kind of like a mini Job, except the writer isn't necessarily facing a lot of the pains and agony and physical anguish that Job was suffering. But he's still kind of having a struggle with why are these things happening. The author of this, his name is Asaph. We know from other places in the Old Testament that he was a Levite, or he was a priest. When David brought the Ark to Jerusalem back many, many years ago, he was one of the chief singers and musicians. And there are a number of other psalms. In fact, Psalm 74, you'll notice, is called a Maskil of Asaph. Right? So he wrote a number of psalms here. This one is probably one that's, certainly it's getting our attention today. And one of the problems that he's having is the problem of envy. He's envious. Look at what he says in verse 3. "For I was envious of the arrogant when I saw the prosperity of the wicked." You know, you can probably thank people like Karl Marx for elevating jealousy to almost an economic policy anymore. We're jealous of those who have more than we do. And the psalmist is jealous of them because they have it better than he does. If you read verses 4 through 12, he just lists all the things that they seem to have it pretty good. They don't have trouble as others have. They're not stricken like the rest of mankind. They scoff. Their mouths are against the heavens, etc., etc., etc. They got everything pretty good. And I don't know if he actually says this, but I think in verses 13 and 14, listen to what he says and see if what I say he's saying is not the same thing. He says, "All in vain have I kept my heart clean and washed my hands in innocence. For all the day long I have been stricken and rebuked every morning." You know what he's saying there? Why should I be good? Why should I be good when all these other folks, they got it better than I do? It seems like God's rewarding them. but he's not rewarding me. Why should I be good? And maybe by implication, I kind of want what they have. Now, if you think that's not too bad a thing, he does take a look at himself. He kind of recognizes what's going on in his own heart. And at some point, down in verses 21, listen to how he kind of resolves it. Or at least he looks at himself. He says, well, here's what was happening. He says, when my soul was embittered, when I was pricked in heart, I was brutish and ignorant. I was like a beast toward you. You see what he's saying? He says, I looked at myself and I said, I was acting like some kind of dumb animal. That's been my attitude. God, that must be what you see in my attitude. You know, he's really brutally honest with himself here, which is really good. He's honest enough to see what's going on inside his own mind and inside of his own heart. And fortunately for us, he does check himself. Verses 16 and 17. But when I thought how to understand this, it seemed to me a wearisome task until I went into the sanctuary of God. Then I discerned their end. He had to come to grips with what he saw. And I don't know that he fully did, except that he kind of realized, you know what? They may have it good now, but at some point, God's got your back. God's got my back here in a way. And eventually he sees that there is going to be some divine retribution for the people that he sees seem to have it all good. And they're really just evil people. Okay. And so by the time we get down to verse 28, he actually returns to his faith. God doesn't necessarily give him everything he wants, but he returns to his faith. And my concern here, I guess, is we need to be very careful in situations like this or in any kind of situation of justifying our anger and our jealousy or justifying any other kind of raw emotion, because I think that also will inhibit your ability to be watchful. Because, you know, being watchful with things that are going on around you, it's just as important to be watchful for the things that are going on in your own heart. And maybe more so, because those are the kind of things that often trip us up. But I want to give you a couple of tips here about how to remain watchful. I don't want this to be all negative today. I want to give you some ways that I think are maybe antidotes to, you know, forgetting to be watchful. Number one is, we remember. We remember. Jesus said when he instituted the Lord's Supper, do this in remembrance of me. And every time we come together to participate in communion, are we not remembering? We're remembering what Jesus did. We're glorifying God because of what Jesus did. We're participating with him. But it really is us remembering. And we weaken our ability to be alert when we forget. Or I think the Old Testament word is we forsake, which basically means you leave God, but forgetfulness is sort of the first step to that. And so when we gather together on Sunday morning, how important is it for us to remember? That will help keep us watchful. A second thing that I think we can do also begins with the letter R. Maybe that's helpful for you. We receive God's blessings with thanksgiving. In 1 Timothy chapter 4, verses 1 through 5, I think there's a really interesting thing that the Apostle Paul says, because he seems to be addressing some people who are denying the church from enjoying certain things. And he goes on to say that the Spirit says that some people will come departing from the faith, et cetera, et cetera. And verse 3, they forbid marriage, they require abstinence from food that God created to be received with thanksgiving. And he's kind of chastising them for keeping people from at least enjoying a few things. And you see, on the positive side of this, we can receive from God blessings if we receive them with thanksgiving and we recognize where they come from. There's nothing wrong with receiving certain blessings from God. You know, I don't know, it seems to me that's what thanksgiving is all about. You know, we're remembering and being thankful to God for those things. Maybe it's not so much receiving the blessings, but it's receiving them with thanksgiving that helps keep us alert and keeps us wanting to forget God. When we ignore God's hand in gift giving, I think we do, in fact, kind of weaken our ability to be watchful at some point. So remember, and receive God's gifts with thanksgiving. And number three is, be very careful of roots of bitterness, because those kind of things can take hold. Hebrews chapter 12 and verse 15 actually has this in the context of Esau. But he tells us here in chapter 12, verse 15, see that no one fails to obtain the grace of God, that no root of bitterness springs up and causes trouble, and by it many become defiled. It's kind of drawing that from a very interesting concept, context back in Deuteronomy chapter 29 and verse 18. And I think the Deuteronomist, who is Moses, is probably referring to a stubborn disposition that expresses itself in unbelief. How many things in your life do you think can cause bitterness? Well, we already mentioned one, and that's jealousy and envy of other people can cause bitterness. I think unresolved anger can cause bitterness. An unforgiving attitude can cause bitterness. And you see, it causes us to lose the grace of God, but it also affects the community and the people around us when we carry this kind of spirit with us. So be very careful about the kinds of things that cause us to be bitter, cause us to have a judgmental attitude toward other people always. Bitterness destroys our faith and, I believe, our ability to be watchful. Bitterness somehow just grabs so much of our attention, doesn't it? When you're angry about something and you feel this bitterness sort of churning up inside of you all the time, what happens? It just consuming. Who can be watchful when you're consumed with that kind of an attitude? So be careful of roots of bitterness. And I think this demands attention to the same kind of attention that the psalmist in Psalm 73 gave to his own heart. Just watch yourself. So remember, receive with thanksgiving what God's given you. Those are good things. You can have them. You can enjoy them if you receive them with thanksgiving. And be very careful about the things that cause roots of bitterness to grow up into our hearts. Be watchful and alert at all times. Remember the Lord, receive his blessings, prevent roots of bitterness. If you do those things, you can be sure that the Lord will find you watchful, dressed and ready for service when he returns. If you have never actually taken on the mantle of the gospel of Jesus Christ, then you have that opportunity to either talk to us today and tell us of your interest. But the point is, God calls you to belief. God calls you to repentance. God calls you to be baptized for the remission of your sins. God calls you to be watchful in your life, to watch for him and wait and put your hope in him. That's what the lesson is all about today. Won't you respond in your way as we stand and sing?